I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma.
Good evening, Vashon Island. How are you doing this fine, fine night? I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies. It is a travel story show. And today we have on one of Vashon's cutest, finest musicians, and his name is Kevin Nortonis. And he's going to tell us a story about traveling from Seattle to Amsterdam in many, many facets and getting there. He is somebody who, and then after the story, we're going to talk to him. He lived in Berlin for many years, and I want to hear all about that as well. So, Kevin, tell me about your story. Tell us about your story.
Well, Megan.
Well, Kevin.
I've been everywhere, man.
I swear to God, I love that song. Every time I hear it, I literally just, as soon as he says, Winnemucca-mac, it literally just gets stuck in my head, that word, Winnemucca-mac.
And then your day's ruined.
The day is gone. Yeah. It's in there, bouncing around forever.
So this is a story about my first time in Germany.
How old were you?
First time you went? Gosh, I don't know.
Young.
It's somewhat, yeah, 2001. That was, I guess, I'd been 27 or something like that.
That's young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I know. At this point, it's like,
I know.
That's super young.
I'd kill to be 27.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe not kill.
Would
but,
you really?
Know. I don't know. It's possible. Somebody offered me that fountain of youth, boy, I wouldn't say no.
Yeah. Delicious. So, yeah. This whole trip happened on, it's like October 15th, 2001. So that is 2 weeks after 9/11.
It's amazing that they were even allowing flying just so quickly after.
Yeah.
I think if I remember correctly, there was no flying for at least, I mean, God, the whole world stopped. It was insane.
Yeah.
You must have been like on one of the first flights that got allowed out.
Maybe. It might have been later. I mean, it was October.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was weird and it was tense. And
I bet that there, obviously the security would have to be out of control. I don't remember flying just like so quickly after, but like for sure, like 8 months or something after.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, it's still intense, you know, how the security is so ramped up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was that feeling that they didn't quite know what to do about it yet. And they were just trying to at least look like they were more serious.
Yeah. You would have really been there for the infancy.
Yeah.
Of the
they put on their serious pants and laced up their serious shoes and got to work.
Serious shoes and their serious pants. Yeah. Listening to serious radio.
Right.
No, I bet it wasn't even around then. I remember the one time it was, I want to say it was 2002. A friend of mine and I, we traveled from whatever. We were like in Italy and we were flying out of Paris, coming back to, I think we were flying to New York. But I had some kind of a weird little butter knife or some kind of a knife in my bag that I didn't even realize I had. And I got through all the security of Paris and beyond, and no one even noticed that I had it. And then I was just like, huh, well, that's not so good if that's getting through. I mean, I wouldn't have flown with it on purpose. I just was literally didn't realize it was there.
Right. Yeah.
You should look inside my purse sometime. It's a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, which is funny. That's the opposite of some of the things that I travel with. Weird instruments, strange wind instruments and percussion instruments. And even though they look to somebody who knows what a trumpet looks like or what a clarinet looks like, it's pretty obviously what it is. But the security people at airports never seem to know.
So,
what is this anyways?
Yeah, right. I can imagine.
So
tell us about your story. So you left Seattle with your traveling group of musicians.
Well, I left Seattle alone. We didn't have an itinerary for everybody, we just individually, you know, getting our tickets and getting there however we could. Some arrived days later, some arrived days early. So I'm just traveling by myself. I went from Seattle to Amsterdam on my way to Berlin. And so I'm in Amsterdam waiting for the plane, having beers, of course.
As you do.
27, I'm traveling.
Yeah. Of course. Uh-huh.
Having one too many, or maybe two. And so I'm waiting in line to get on the next plane, and I see a couple of my bandmates there. And it's super exciting. It's like, oh my God, we're on the same plane. It's
right.
Awesome.
I mean, in Amsterdam, what are the chances of you guys actually booking all together on the same flight?
Oh, it was great. Yeah. And so we're just having a great crack, and we're talking, we're standing in the line, we're looking at our tickets, and we're like, oh, are we on the same side of the plane? Yeah. We're in the same row. Yeah. Oh, we're on the same, you know, we're right next to each other.
Yeah. That's be super exciting.
So it's a party.
Yeah.
It's a party.
And you're already drinking.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Yeah. We stashed our little duty freeze in our bags and in our back pockets, and
oh God,
we got it all.
I know the scenario.
Right. and then we finally board. And we're being loud, and joyously loud, not belligerently. And it's super fun. And then we get there, we sit down. The plane's taking a little extra time to get off the ground, so we're just rapping, having a good time. After a while, a fella comes and stops right at our row and looks down at me, and he's like, "Hey, man, you're in my seat." No, I've got my seat. I got my ticket right here. It's got my name on it. It's got my seat number. Everything's cool. And the guy looks at his ticket and he's like, "Well, this is my ticket and this is my name and that's my seat." And so I make it sound standoffish, but everybody was in a fine mood. It's cool. Just confused.
It's very confusing.
You listen here, buddy.
This is my seat. No, this is my seat.
Yeah, right. And so some pretty serious confusion ensues, right? And we're getting all the stewards and the stewardesses and the whole cabin crew, and everybody's trying to figure out why is there, supposed to be 100 people on the plane. There are 101.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just can't figure it out. And this poor fella, and I'm sitting down already, so I'm not kidding up. He's the,
yeah, you got there first. News you lose.
He's the odd man out.
Yeah.
And after some time, this poor fella ends up getting offered a seat because everybody's got a ticket. Getting offered one of the bucket seats at the rear of the plane.
Not where you want to sit.
No. And he just looks just so uncomfortable and so unhappy about the whole situation.
How long is that flight from Amsterdam to Berlin?
Can't be that long.
No.
Hour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't like be that bad. I'd do a bucket seat for an hour to get to Berlin.
Right? Come on.
For sure.
Buck up, buddy.
Take one for the team. Right. What's your problem anyway?
But the image is etched in my memory as of this poor fella in this tiny bucket seat with his knees up, on his chest. He's
just, You kind of felt sorry for him, but kind of not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It was a confusing feeling.
So what were the stewardesses saying? I mean, what were they?
They were just trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're giving everybody the benefit of the doubt, of course.
Yeah.
Like somebody made a mistake and it's not the customer. So
they're going to let you stay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it was settled and we're about ready to take off. And at some point I looked down at my ticket and realize that it's not me. It's a name that sounds just strangely similar to mine. It looks strangely similar to mine. Huh? I'm Kevin Nortness, and the name on there was like Calvin Norsquist or something. Just quite nearly me, but not exactly me.
And you had not realized that
I hadn't realized it, nor had anybody else who had the ticket in their hand at one point or another, the cabin crew, everybody.
And so you drew the attention of this to the airline.
Yes. Yeah.
People.
Against my own best interest. I should not, in retrospect, I should not have done that. We're ready to take off. Everybody's cool. Homeboy Calvin
They do not like when the name does not match up.
No, oh, they don't. No. They really don't. But it was exciting because I felt like I'd solved the case, you know?
You just wanted to know where everybody, how the situation laid itself out?
Yeah.
So then what did they do? What did the...
So I hoist the ticket and scream as loud. I found it. I got the answer right here. And showed them. And that is where the whole situation changed completely. So up until that point, like I said, the cabin crew, they were cool about it, right? That was our mistake. At that point, they realized that I don't belong on that plane.
And they're going to get you off of that flight.
Yes. Yeah. Oof. It's, you know, right after September 11th. And
yeah, people are not messing around. Uh-huh. They get real serious when it comes to airlines.
Yeah. I was nobody's friend immediately.
And what were your musician friends doing?
At that point, I think they probably realized that the faster they distance themselves from me, the better.
Yeah, I imagine.
I don't know this guy.
Yeah, all of a sudden they're like, wait, I wasn't drinking with him.
Yeah, right.
I don't know him at all.
Yeah, there's nothing hidden in my boot.
Oh, God, guilt by association is a tough one.
And so the whole thing starts up again. Now, instead of there's one too many people on the plane, now there is a person on the plane who doesn't belong on the plane. And so they call the police. And while the police were on their way.
And just for the record, Dutch people are the tallest people in the world. So you can imagine having some tall Dutch policemen.
That's even better.
Not what you want. All right. let me hear it because I don't know it.
We're almost there. So while the police get called, while they're on their way, the ticket gets passed around again. They're like, wait a second, like, give me that ticket again. And somewhere in the fray, the ticket gets lost.
Oh, God. The story just gets better.
It just gets worse and worse. And now instead of me having the wrong ticket, there is no ticket.
Oh my God. Yeah. You're going straight to jail.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then so the police show up and that's all over. And they haul me on out of there. But the police, the Dutch police, they were just absolutely gorgeous, like 6'3" women. Both of them.
Wow, really?
They were great, yeah.
Oh, well, that's not such a bad escorting.
Not bad
situation.
At all. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Were they nice to you?
They were.
Were they? Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Dutch people are very attractive.
They had me by the elbow, and I was not complaining. Yeah.
And a little frisking here and there.
Yeah, totally.
So what did they end up doing with
Kitten
you?
Getting frisky.
Getting super frisky.
Uh-huh. So that's the most fun part of the story. They took me to a little holding tank, and I sat there for 2 hours or something. Finally, some suit comes in and says, oh, we got it figured out. Okay, so sorry about that, Mr. Nortness, blah, 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 and boot me out the door.
Did they give you food and water?
No, they did not, nor did they pay for my Heinekens.
Oh.
While I was waiting. Nothing. I got nothing.
That is so bogus.
Yeah, it's super bogus. And while we're at it, the plane that I was supposed to be on is long gone.
Of course it is.
Yeah. And they buy me a new ticket and they tell, okay, your next plane's coming in another hour or something like that. But all my stuff was on the plane.
Oh,
that I was supposed to be on.
Right. Yeah. And all so, your like equipment and.
And all my equipment. Yeah. And so here's where the story just tanks.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize it was actually going to get worse.
Yeah. And so I finally get to Berlin, mm-hmm. and go down to get my luggage. And there is my bass clarinet, which is a pretty big instrument. You know, it's a 3.5 feet long clarinet.
Wow.
Yeah. If not taller. Anyways, and it had been on the luggage conveyor, mm-hmm. just banging up against the end of it. For 6 hours or whatever. Just bonk, 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 bonk. Oh, poor thing.
Oh, was it all bruised and battered? when you took it out?
It was broken in two.
And did you have...
Yeah.
So when were the shows that you were supposed to be playing in Berlin? Were they like the following day or...
I can't recall, but they were soon enough afterwards that, so anyways, I get the clarinet. Yeah. Well, this was a kind of a pretty big production, dance. We had dance, we had multimedia, we had probably projections, and we had a small pit orchestra.
Sounds
there.
Great.
So we had a bunch of rehearsals set up. So rehearsals definitely started the next day.
Oh.
And I'd gotten the clarinet. I assumed everything was fine. It's in a case. It's a big, strong case. So I grabbed it off the thing, and then I went about my business. And then I get to the theater where we'd been housed, and take the thing out. And it's just this cactus, just busted cactus with all the little bits and everything.
What a shame!
It was such a bummer.
And musicians are so fond of their instruments.
Yeah.
That must have been heartbreaking for you.
It really was. Yeah, but on top of heartbreaking, it was a practical mess.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Anyways, I eventually got that thing glued back together and it was fine.
But, it actually worked for the shows.
No, I glued it back together with some sort of glue and held the thing with my foot as I was playing it. It kind of held it together. I eventually fixed it after that.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. A traveling musician in all of its glories with Kevin Nortonis. Thank you for sharing that story, Kevin. That's awesome. Not awesome. It's a great story. Not awesome at the time.
Yeah.
It's one of those situations.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. So that music that we just heard, Kevin, that is music that you played from that tour, right? That was part of the production.
Mm-hmm.
Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Well,
what was the name of the band? And it's beautiful music.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing it with us.
That group is called the Degenerate Art Ensemble.
I love that name.
It's a group that I was with for very many years, and they're still around.
And you're not a part of them anymore.
I get asked back for every once in a while for... make little cameos and okay, that's not cameos, just to be a part of the thing.
Yeah,
but they're still going strong and they're doing fantastically.
That's great.
Yeah, they travel the world and make amazing art.
I want to look it up more. I want to find that music and listen to it at home. It's cool.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of things that you would hear in Berlin.
Right.
So it's just
super ultra artsy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Which Berlin has that whole scene to it. So. After such a crazy negative experience, how did you end up then living in Berlin?
Well, so that trip, we were there for a month, and just had just the most wonderful time. That city is just so vibrant.
Yeah,
it's
pretty great.
Different than here.
It is very different from here. That's
yeah.
True fact.
And we were going, and so we would do these residencies in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And on our off time, we would go and play clubs. So we actually had two different shows. We had this, we had that dance piece, mm-hmm. and then we had a kind of a club show that this chamber orchestra would put on. It was a little bit funkier and grittier,
a little more of the people.
Yeah. But Berlin was so awesome that you could show up to a club and be like, hey, we got a band, and they'd say, what are you doing tonight?
Oh, love that. Snapdragon's a little bit like that when people come around.
Right. And you'd scramble to make up a bunch of posters and then post them around the neighborhood and people would show up to your show and that was that. And I just couldn't get enough of it. And I went back home to Seattle and didn't make it more than maybe a few months and that was it.
And then you went back.
Yep.
Good for you. Well, thank you, Kevin, for sharing your stories with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I have a little story. I like to keep... the story is kind of in the same region. So this is not in Germany, but it is in Austria. And it's entitled Umhausen. And it was from a while back now. Not so many years, but like 5, I think. All right, we're going to start this. Back in 2001, Adam, my husband had been a teacher of English in the Sichuan city of Chengdu, and where every day he would eat pizza at a little shop called High Fly Pizza. It was a place where so many Westerners who were homesick would meet and hang out. Adam befriended an Austrian woman named Julia. They became great friends, and through this, she and I became great friends. A few years ago now, we decided to go and visit her in her hometown of Umhausen in the Austrian Alps. We took a big jet plane and headed for Amsterdam from Seattle, and then several more modes of transportation down to Innsbruck. Neither one of us had ever been to this area before, and there is no greater feeling than a new adventure with the one you love. It was late when we arrived, so we went straight to our room and fell asleep. We awoke early and wanted to head out for some nourishment. I walked out the door and in complete amazement realized that we were literally in the mountain. At the end of the promenade of the main area was the giant face of the mountain. I had never felt so physically dwarfed before. It was sort of shocking. There was sun, there was snow, there were older couples making the promenade. There was an older couple in a cafe we found draped in fur around their shoulders sipping wine for breakfast. We decided to imbibe as well, alongside a slice of sweet decadence. I couldn't figure out getting my phone to work. So we had no way to contact our friend, and we had missed our initial meeting. But I had her address, and so onto a small train, we went further up into the mountains to the town of Umhausen. The landscape just kept getting more beautiful with rocky edges and graceful snow resting on the trees as we ascended up. After an hour and a half, we found ourselves in the ever picturesque square of the town, which is centered around a 17th century church with its high steeple commanding all the attention. We found our friend's house and we were greeted by the whole family, much laughter, and many shots of schnapps. Say that fast. Shots of schnapps. I had only ever known the dumbed-down varieties of schnapps in the States, like the almighty overly sweet peach or mint that used to be painstakingly drank in by many an underage drinker, as it was the only thing not drank in by the adults. But here in the Tyrol region, schnapps is king and made with the beautiful flavors of the region, like hazelnut or pear, and every house makes their own version. As tradition holds tight, we were preparing for New Year's Eve, and we were having raclette and fondue, all the beautiful flavors washed down with thick and bubbly beer. Midnight on New Year's Eve, Austria. The clock ticks. People scream with joy to welcome in the new year. Fireworks were released, lighting up the mountainside. And we danced to the Blue Danube waltz on a rooftop. Feeling the chill of the snow, I snuggled in closer. And for about 5 solid minutes, all was right with the world. I didn't have to worry as I pulled my husband in closer and we danced under the Tyrolean stars. It was truly magical. With time, we all fell asleep. On New Year's Day, musicians and singers ramble from house to house, singing for their food and more schnapps, which we delivered. By the end of the morning, there were some very happy musicians dressed in lederhosen. I myself couldn't have been happier for these moments. Before we left Umhausen, we heard about the passing of a friend who had struggled with cancer for quite some time, and she had just turned 40 years old. I went back to that church and I lit a candle for her for a peaceful journey to the unknown. She was in our minds for the rest of the holiday and beyond. We left the snow of Austria and headed south for the sun. We had taken some rocks with us from her house before we left Vashon. We said a goodbye to her by throwing them in the Mediterranean Sea. It was a bittersweet trip. But the dance of the Blue Danube under the stars with Adam is one I'd like to have for a whole lifetime more. That is an old favorite of many people. We were having a good time joking about that song in 2001, and it's all its all that it comprises and memories that hold for that. I would like to thank Kevin very much for coming in and being my guest today.
It's been a pleasure.
And keep on rocking in the free world on Vashon Island with all your musical talents.
Will do. Yeah. Keep on rocking in the quarantine world.
Yeah, I know.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I am Megan Hastings, and this was the Cats and Jammer Follies. Join us next week for a new place to visit in the world.